Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, thank you for joining Accepted As I Am Blog Talk Radio Show. How are you? It's a beautiful, beautiful day here in Michigan. The weather is sunny and blue skies, and it seems like it's been this almost, I'd say 90% of the time, this kind of weather. Although I don't tend to base my happiness on the weather. I think I've said in other shows, I actually like when it's bad weather because then I have the whole parks to myself. So there's benefits to both. So how are you today? How is your mind? How is your heart? And remembering that the intention that we hold together is that we begin from a place of wholeness, that it's so important that we remember that we forget who we are. We forget that we are magnificent creations. We forget that we're loved. But this forgetting doesn't change the essence of our being. And that foundation, again, is just so important, because then from that foundation, from realizing and affirming our already present wholeness, then we allow whatever we're feeling, whatever's going through, a context that can allow a true healing instead of a greater identification with it. Don't discount the power that Freudian psychology has had on our general public and our cultural assumptions. That Freudian-based psychology, so that's like cognitive behavioral therapy, childhood analysis therapy, which has its benefit. I'm not discounting that at all. However, if we believe that we can analyze ourselves enough to finally discover peace, we will be trapped. And this analyzation, this rehashing, this belief that if we can just figure it all out and break it into parts, there's another term for that, and that's a Newtonian perspective. And Newtonian refers to, you know, the guy that brought that formula F equals MA. And depending on your philosophy of quantum physics, there's debate of whether that's really true, even though that's the foundation of Newtonian physics. So Newtonian physics, or a mechanistic way of looking at things, is that there's a belief that if you break something into parts, you can understand it. So like if I had a leaf, if I dissected a leaf into the tiniest of parts, I can understand it. Or if I dissect the body into the tiniest of parts, I will understand it. But is that really true? You know, I can dissect water. I can understand that as hydrogen and oxygen. But unless I really experience it and taste it, that quality, that experience of water, I'm not really going to understand water. And our psyche and our heart, our spirit is really the same. So there's something in life where that mechanistic, meaning approaching things like a machine, or Newtonian, that Newtonian meaning, okay, if I push this, it will push back. That everything has a linear, logical explanation. That works when we're approaching a car. That works when we're working on a computer. That works when we're building a house. Those kind of laws work very well. But when we're approaching the human heart and our connection to the divine, it falls short, right? I mean, at least, and that's what I'm trying to bring into our awareness of how much that we still approach things without even realizing it, trying to break things into its parts, trying to figure things out and analyzing. I had a 14-year-old, I usually don't see teenagers, but once in a while when I have a client or mentee that I've been working with and they can feel that it's important for me to connect with one of their children, I do. And I had a 14, 15-year-old yesterday that I was explaining this to him about how if you keep on analyzing and analyzing, it really doesn't help you to be peaceful and happy. And I explained it through soccer. I said, what would happen if you were on the soccer field and you were analyzing everything that was happening and really plotted out what you were going to do when the ball came. And without hesitation, he said, I'd miss the ball. And how often do we miss the ball in life because we have spent so much time analyzing and rehashing? How many times do we miss an opportunity? Or we really get to enjoy something that's right there in front of us, the laughter of a child or somebody that's trying to be kind to us, but we're not able to receive it because we're so caught in our minds or holding on to analyzing a story of the past. And we really miss in believing that we can dissect life and break it up into parts to finally have freedom. We miss the ability to really taste the sweet essence of life. And that life is really, that life, your life is the life of God. It's not separate. I think God's not over there and your life is here, that they're one and the same. So from an ecological or eco-psychology perspective, there's a book by Jack Kornfield that says, After Enlightenment, the Laundry. And it's a funny, you hear people quote it a lot. It's Jack Kornfield, amazing writer. I love his work. I love him. One day I would love to meet him. And it usually gets a laugh when you tell people that because they're like, oh, yeah, it is about everyday work and every day that even when you have these great insights, it is about then the laundry. And then I had one teacher say to me, well, what about laundry before, during, and after enlightenment? And that really seems a little bit more true to life, right? Because the other model that we have in spirituality that has really separated us from life, separated us from the body, is we have, and this does not mean masculine or gender, but we have a patriarchal model of religion. And that has really invaded our consciousness, whether we grew up in a religious world or not. And what that means is we are looking to transcend, to separate from all our earthly attachments, and then thinking if we finally separate from our earthly attachments, we'll finally have heaven or enlightenment. There's a transcendent, autonomous race towards trying to... So autonomous meaning individual, that there's a strive to be that in the patriarchal religions as well as in our culture, success is valued as, okay, if you're autonomous and independent, then you are powerful. And in the patriarchal focused religions, there's a strong distinction between the absolute and the relative. And it further widens the gap between us identifying with the world beyond our human self, meaning life, meaning our breath, meaning the sunshine, meaning that beautiful person that's in front of you, meaning the animal world, meaning the food that you eat, your body. And this distinction promotes a stripping away of ordinary life, a denial of the body, and a striving towards that autonomous spiritual self that is only dependent on God, an abstract God. And only once all these attachments are stripped away will heaven or enlightenment be reached. It's an insane model. And in this race for transcendence, life is denied. It's like the body must be overcome and emotions are seen as weak and the emotions are to be conquered. And this self-deprecation disconnects us from the natural world. And we have an unspoken disgust of our humanity that becomes translated in an inability to comprehend really the magnitude of our ecological crisis and our continued destructive actions to our world and to our body. But there's a disconnect there. It's hard for people to connect to really what's happening because there's a disconnect from their own humanity. But what if life is spiritual, right? And what if the dirt is holy? Because dirt's from where our food comes from. And what if God includes the absolute transcendence, and the beautiful messiness that is our humanness in life? And what if, as a culture, we begin to embrace life, our emotions, and bodies as part of this omnipresence and divine force? What if what we define as weak is actually a source of strength? What if what we define as weak is actually our source of strength? Because when we're able to see the beauty and the perfection of what is our life in this moment, there's something that spontaneously, organically happens. We touch the divine. We touch the essence of things. We feel the interconnection of things. We realize that we are part of that life. We so put our happiness on the layaway plan, waiting till, I don't know, till we go to heaven to be happy, till we take that vacation. And what if right now in this moment, this is the main show? All the connecting to spirit and angels and hearing people's soul for all these years, what I continually hear is that this is really the main show. That there's not some transcendent reality that we're trying to strive towards. That right now, that we're here to be in this playground of this reality, this physical reality, and really express love, beauty, truth, all of our humanity into this reality. And what if we even fought to get, not fought, it's the right word, wanted to be here? That Earth was the exciting place to be. And that this reality is a playground of expression, a playground of really getting to anchor in. There's I don't know if you've seen the movie X-Men, the last movie. It was so good. And, there's a lot of fighting. And the main message of the movie is hope and compassion. And the power that affects has on the world. So of course I love it, and I am a big, big fan of superhero movies because I really feel that each of us are a superhero, and know that each of us are a superhero. That we have, and hero and strength defined as your ability to find beauty, your ability to create change, your ability to be a warrior for love. Your ability to live in that archetype of the artist or the liberator, fire, or you communicate love, you communicate inspiration. Those are superhero qualities. I don't know if you've heard me talk about Michael Mallon from Superhero Training Academy. Just really great work with kids and helping them discover their superhero self. But those archetypes, which of course go back to Carl Jung, and there's archetypes for the chakras, archetypes are a great model of allowing us to see where we really have other parts of ourselves that are yet to be explored. So superhero movies are really a great, although a lot of the model of the hero is really feeding that autonomous, independent self. Whereas if you look at the heroes of the world, they all had a team of people around them. They worked in team. They worked in community, like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King. That these people that created these changes weren't flying through the sky all by themselves. So in X-Men, but there's I won't tell you if you haven't seen it, but there's a quote in there that says, one of the characters is having trouble dealing with the pain that he sees in the earth, and it's overwhelming him. And the other character says to him, their pain is your strength. See, their pain is your strength. And that's a really profound, profound statement. Because pain and suffering in the earth really does have the ability to be your strength. When you're able to be present and witness suffering or pain, it has a powerful ability to remind you of what's real and true. It has a powerful ability to open your heart and an open heart does not mean that you're now susceptible to arrows coming into your heart. That's not an open heart. That's how most people perceive an open heart, and that's saying it simply, but they see open heart as weakness. When I say open heart, I mean that you're fully expanded into your true self, that you have opened up to that universal force that is life, that you are committed to being yourself in a way that is authentic and real, and that in that self-love you've connected to your divine connection. So that's what I mean by open heart, is you've chosen love. And witnessing pain and suffering, it really reminds you. For me, that's one of my morning practices is connecting into the pain and suffering of the world. And of course, in Buddhism, they call it a metta, or M-E-T-T-A, I believe I'm spelling it right, metta practice. That's loving kindness. So Tonglen. Tonglen. Is that right? Yeah, Tonglen. Somebody's going to email me or something. And we do all have capacity to, when in that connecting that suffering or pain, we have capacity that you won't be overwhelmed by it. Now, if you're feeling really, really sick physically or emotionally, probably not a great practice to do. You probably want to get out to nature, or you want to take a nap, or eat a healthy meal. Probably not a good time to connect with the pain and suffering of the earth. But sometimes that's not always true either. I've seen people where I've given them a practice, whether their heart opens through animals or it opens through children or through the elderly or through nature, seeing suffering in nature, it's changed their life. So that pain, what we call, and even when we look within our own being, right, that pain within us is a source of strength. Because it helps us to be able to define and not defines the word, but it helps us to be able to embody love and really embody life force. You know, it's many things in life that we define as weak are actually sources of strength. So many things that, our mistaken model of power and strength, which I read in other radio show, so I won't read it here, but Joanna Macy, who does a spectacular, her power width model is something that I probably reread that every couple weeks of her website resources on power and systems, and such a spectacular person and her ability to explain oneness and connection from an ecological model. So I'd started kind of talking about some assumptions or beliefs in spirituality about the patriarchal way of looking at it as separate from life, spiritual bypassing of life, and then also talking about our Newtonian, Freudian way of approaching the mind. So what is the other model of that, right? What's the life-sustaining model of that? It's embracing life as it is. It's realizing in that embracing, that's your strength, that's power. That when you, and of course, it's accepting life as it is, but it's not accepting from a submission or it's in a powerful yielding, that it's actually very powerful to surrender. Because surrender in what I'm explaining is really allowing yourself to see and engage in the moment, and at the same time to be connected into the all being, to be fully present in the life experience, or to be the dancer and the dance in that moment, and to be all in that moment, to be all in, whether that, and it's so tempting when something's not the way we want it to be, right, to not be all in, whether it be a relationship, or a moment with yourself and you're sitting out in nature but you're really uncomfortable physically, so it's hard to be fully present, right? So to be fully present, to be fully accepting what is, or in that moment, that's your source of power. And I understand it's hard when being a condition or a relationship is not the way you want it to be. But if you don't bring your full self, if you don't bring your full connection or an open heart to that thing, how is it going to change? If you don't fully experience, fully engage that emotion. Osho, who was a pretty controversial spiritual teacher, but had some cool things to say. And I remember reading in one of his books, he says, be all in. Meaning, if you're angry, be fully angry. Be conscious of that anger. Or if you're happy, be all happy. And he was saying how so often we don't fully engage or we're not fully participating in that moment. So then we always have a sense of it's not complete or it's not done. I see people do this in relationship a whole bunch. The relationship is really not the way that they want it to be. But it's bringing them, that's where our deepest fears come up, right? A relationship is where the spiritual rubber meets the road, so to speak. Not a great statement, but gets the point across. And relationship and sexuality is really where most of our neuroses show up. And it's where we got to practice the most compassion for ourselves and that other person. But if we're not really fully participating in the relationship, then in a relationship to ourselves, number one, and then with that person, it can keep it in limbo for 20, 30, 40 years. Right? We can stay in that where things don't ever really seem to change. I suppose that's the risk we run when we begin to fully engage life and engage ourselves. Is that life will be, we enter into that flow of grace, that flow of harmony, that evolutionary impulse that wants to run through us, and life will begin to change. And so that participation is going to cause some things to change, which is ultimately what we want, right? I remember in my past relationship, well, it's like now 5 years ago, it was about a year and a half before the ending. Now, I've had, before I say this story, I've had plenty of clients and mentees where people that I mentor that I've suggested this and some great things have happened in the sense they stay with the person. And because when you shift and you really engage and are present, that other person has to come along. As you fully bring yourself to the table, you fully are present, that person has to shift with you. You know, that's the power of self-love. That's the power of being yourself. So often I'll have people, in fact, I just had a session with a man the other day, had a similar story that he's done a lot of self-love and inner work and love in his darkness. And so a lot of times people can't look me in the eye. They'll look away. Or I've had in sessions where people have sat in front of me. So it's a couple of times where they start shifting and they had to get up out of the room. It was so uncomfortable. And I really hadn't said anything. It's just that's what self-love does to another person. Kind of funny that how self-love can do something when you're not doing anything. But that can happen in relationship, and the problem is, of course, we get into relationship and we blame them for how we feel, and we expect them to, we begin to put unreasonable expectations of our happiness on the other person. So the story I was going to tell is I had made a decision about a year and a half before the relationship ended to fully engage, fully participate, fully bring myself forward. And boy, did it create a lot of change. And I thought I was doing that beforehand. I really did. But what happened is I was able to see what was really there and what was not there, which I really couldn't have that clarity beforehand. So Diane just came in, and she is the amazing colonic therapist and raw food nutritionist and holistic healer here. I want to say hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
So I'm going to head up into the healing room here. Well, actually, I can't because I wanted to talk about something else with all of you that I'm being drawn to share. So anything else, I just want to circle back, anything else about our perceptions and assumptions on spirituality? Well, you know, and One more thought about that is we, because we have such a emphasis on patriarchal emphasis on things, and we also have really a culture based on land ownership, right? Owning nature, owning things, where for 10,000 years of human history, we didn't have that kind of relationship with nature and the land. Things weren't, it wasn't until we began animal husbandry that it began to shift our relationship with the earth and shift our relationship with our body and our feelings and with our food. So because we have such a strong belief that independence and autonomy are what define a successful person, we don't want to admit sometimes ways that we are interdependent or reliant on another person or on nature. So as Mary Gomes and Alan Kanner, who are amazing psychologists and eco-psychologists, they quote from them is that domination becomes a way to deny dependence. So domination becomes a way to deny dependence. So when we separate from nature and our bodies and our emotions, we invite a battle with our own animal nature, our own animal bodies, no longer trusting our ability to find balance. We begin to approach even our body with a need to dominate. So look how we approach the body, right? We have a need to dominate it with invasive surgical procedures, treatments that can kill the body, that are for healing, and drugs that suppress the body's natural rebalancing processes. So like if you have a decongestant, rather than give something that can help promote that congestion from leaving, we're going to give an anti-congestant. You know, something that's going to push it away. Or if you've got inflammation, rather than looking at why the whole system is inflamed and what's off balance, let me give you an anti-inflammatory. Or if you got an infection, let me give you an antibiotic. You notice the word there, anti? It's kind of anti-life. So anti-inflammatories, antibiotics are anti-life, and they approach the body like a war zone where we don't even want to acknowledge our dependence on our own body. So knowing that we're part of this life system, this communication system, that we really, we've lost because of our Newtonian physics, because of our mechanistic way of looking at our minds and our hearts, because of our patriarchal model of religion, because of animal husbandry and our disconnect from the earth. We've lost our ability to hear our bodies, lost our ability to hear our emotions, and we've lost our ability to really connect with what's happening on the planet. And that disconnect, actually, that disconnect is I think the most common thing that I see people suffering from is loneliness. In fact, the Dalai Lama, when Pema Chodron did a lecture back in 2006, amazing spiritual teacher, highly recommend anyone that would want a big motherly grandmother hug to YouTube her work, Pema, P-E-M-A, Chodron, C-H-O-D-R-O-N. She called it she said the Dalai Lama said that the loneliness was the North American plague. And we're lonely because we've disconnected from life. We have abstract concepts of God. And we don't understand that tangible, connectable resource that's right there in our own bodies and in life. It's kind of like because we, you know, we could go out in seeing the connection to life. An eco-psychology practice, which I include those in retreats, but an eco-psychology practice could be just like you're in your office and you go outside and you take a breath and you see that there's a connection there. You begin to reconnect, right? You reconnect through your breath and through the sunshine. But because we're unaware of our tragic disconnection from nature, we reach for really complex and fabricated solutions. Right, we don't think it's as simple as reconnecting back to our bodies and the food we eat and going out in nature. Like, it just really can't be that simple. So as we reach for these fabricated solutions, these complex solutions, it's kind of like fertilizing a plant and wondering why it's not growing when we've forgotten to give it water and soil. So as we reconnect back to our bodies, listening to our body's wisdom, its innate divine intelligence, and the emotional wisdom within us, that every emotion is a sign of an unmet need, and that needs are not weak, we really do rediscover that we are part of an intrinsic pattern that is continually trying to help us grow, trying to help us become more of our already present, brilliant selves. But life really can't support us when we're trying to go back into the earth, right? When we're trying to play small or not fully engage life. So we remember as we begin to bring compassion to our thoughts, compassion to our feelings, we begin to listen to our body's wisdom, begin to know that our emotions are a sign of something that we're needing, and then honor that need as valid and important. Remember that there's really a force that's continually cheering us on to grow and grow and grow. And as I talked about last month, about the energy of the West, that we're really a culture trapped in adolescence because we don't have enough transitions out of adolescence. We're pushing, we push the boundaries of sex and food and drugs, hoping to find ourselves. There's not a model of, most people do relationship in adolescence from what I see and what I've experienced with hundreds of hours with relationship counseling with others and myself. there was truly a part of me when I left my last relationship that had to grow up that was doing relationship like a teenager. Using archetype models again, what I see most people do relationship as, they try to do it through the maiden and the prince, I call it. There's nothing wrong with the maiden or the prince. The maiden is the part of ourselves that is females that likes, is innocent and dancing and kind of exploring her sexuality, likes to be seen and likes to be told she's pretty and likes compliments and really likes that energy of being, I want to say rescued, but that energy of being pursued, and it's always got to be that kind of push-pull pursual. And then the energy of the archetype of the prince is the one that is continually pursuing, like he's always on a quest, right? So he's in that pushing, going to impress kind of energy. He's going to jump the highest fence to impress the woman. And in that energy of the prince, what happens, so as we take those models into our adult relationships, is the maiden is unable to really identify her needs and communicate them in a healthy way, just making assumptions that the man should know. Well, he should know what my needs are. And then the prince, what happens to him, because he's always trying to impress her, is he, if she does communicate a need or a feeling, he really feels like he's failed as a man. So she shares a feeling or a thought, and he either shuts down and feels guilty about it, like he's done something wrong, or as the prince, he needs to go and fix it. So it's really hard when we're trying to do relationship like teenagers, and we have kids, and we have a house, and we have all these things that we're trying to let all these things rest on the foundation of a very immature relationship. Now, that doesn't mean that that person is the maiden or the prince in the rest of their life. Like, you know, there's parts of ourselves that are really unconscious, haven't remembered their fullness. And then there can be parts of ourselves that are really in full expression and really in our power and our strength and our connection. You know, when I had realized that about my relationship 5 years ago, I ran a healing center. I had many clients. I was, you know, it's not like I was sitting on a street corner with no expression, no giving love. Like there was a lot of actualizing my expression, my function into the planet. And And knowing that we all have a function, yes, that you are talented, you have a function, that you are brilliant, that you lack nothing. And when I say function, I like the word function instead of gifts. Even though we all have gifts, I just don't fully like that word because it implies a specialness. Like it's like your feet have a function, so you have a function. And your feet are pretty awesome, your hands are pretty awesome, but it's your function. Just like my function is to greater version of themselves, and almost like an energetic soul surgery that I do. That's just my function. It's just what I'm here to do. But it doesn't make me any different than anyone else. So we all have a function. We all have an ability to, whether it be through poetry or it be through our presence and our smile when we're at work. Those are really important things that can shift the energy of our planet. Or maybe your function is you have a really amazing ability to hear the deeper meaning of what someone is saying. That's a function or a gift. So I want to just summarize before I move on everything that I've said, that it's important for us to realize the cultural assumptions that are happening so that we don't, again, try to take responsibility for the entire backwards thinking that's on the planet. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, just blaming the planet and then living your life as a victim. No, it's just recognizing that really you're having to deprogram yourself from a cultural assumptions. And I bring that into my retreats and into my sessions with people because it's important that they understand that the connection and the disconnection, and that they have the full context. You know, when I'm asking people to accept vulnerably their brilliance or to accept vulnerably their darkness, it's important that we have the whole context of why we are doing this and why we've become so disconnected from our essential self. Our essential self that includes our brilliance and our function and our all the roles that we play, as well as the forgiveness and the love and the divine qualities that are within us, as well as our humanity and our bodily sensations and our grumbling stomachs and our hugs and all those things included. On a different note, I do have a couple retreats coming up. I have room, I think, for one more person. I could be mistaken on that, August 16th, and the next date is September 13th. August 16th is a day of retreat, and so is September 13th. It's the same format. It's self-love through non-duality, which is a lot of what I'm talking about, is loving yourself through that interconnected web and true nature. And so we are going to do some amazing, I am so excited for what we have planned of a practice, a really amazing practice of self-compassion, like really a practice, not just in the mind, not just feeling it with your eyes closed, an actual practice of moving it and through nature. So we're going to do a medicine walk in nature of self-compassion. We are going to do partner practices with non-dual love. And we have the day finishing with a sound immersion, so sound healing to really give ourselves that nice integration at the end of the day. So that's going to be, it's going to start early. It's going to start at 7:30 in the morning and then go to 8:30 at night. So it's a full packed day. But I see people get a lot out of those days. It's just they can really come and really fully participate and then they go home and probably spend at least 2 or 3, maybe a month later, just integrating everything that they opened up and all the insights they received. So before I move on, I do want to communicate, too, if I sound a little tired today, I've got a new roommate, who I love, an amazing person, he has been, I think, doing some processing or something and been up in the middle of the night. So me and my doggy Masa have not gotten a lot of sleep the last couple of days. I'm really grateful to have a roommate. He's a great friend. He was a deacon for 15 years and a therapist, and so just nice to have that. And I'm really tired because I have gotten very little sleep. So the tiredness in my voice is that. Although I'm happy, I had a really nice bike ride through Mayberry this morning, and just really nice. I want to share something with you about the power of self-love. I had a client a few weeks ago. He's 12 years old, and he had a lot of anger, and his dad had a lot of anger, and I was hoping to guide him into understanding anger as a cry for love within himself and then within his dad. Because unfortunately, I wasn't able to go and remove him out of the situation. I mean, ideally, I would have been like, okay, get away from your dad. Your dad is not being very kind to you. Not physically abusing, but verbally not being kind. So I instead of trying to put a happy face sticker on that, they say a happy face sticker on an engine light, just really accepting what is. And I said, okay, your dad's not being very kind. He's drinking. He's got some problems going on there. And how can we address this? So he is, this 12-year-old really realized, he had some insights about, wow, I'm angry because of this, and how my needs are not being met, and dad's angry because of this, and he's not able to cope. So the 12-year-old had an experience where his dad got really angry, and he chose to engage it from a place of really taking responsibility for himself and not engaging his dad's anger. He shared with his mom after the experience. He looked at his mom. He says, you know what, Mom? And she said, what? And the 12-year-old said, I realize that when people are kinder, when people are nicer to themselves, they're nicer to other people. Isn't that amazing? A 12-year-old realized that. If people are kinder to themselves, they're nicer to other people. You imagine if you knew that at 12 years old. I certainly did not know that. You know, I thought that it was, you know, so seeking approval. And my maiden, trying to seek approval and impress everybody, I had no clue that self-love and self-acknowledgement had that kind of power. So something that I've been, I was going to mention one more retreat. October 10th is my next retreat, and that's going to be up at Metamora. It's Windrise Retreat Center, and it's going to be really a living and uncovering your life purpose if you're already in it. Life purpose, passion, component of desire. That desire is not a negative thing. So your purpose, your yearning, your desire, and moving that through the four directions, using that model to really frame it in a powerful way. And that's going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 10th. I believe 10th, 11th, and 12th. It could be off, but that weekend, that second weekend in October. Very excited for that. It's an amazing location. It's got close to 30 acres of land, and people have their own cozy beds, and the food, I hear, is just it's homemade, it's organic, it's just amazing meals. So one more thing I want to talk about in the time that we have left together is reminding this quantum principle that is, I'm going to talk about two things. I'm just feeling into what's important to talk about. And again, thank you for being patient with my tired brain today. Very tired. Oh, thank you. So as I said, one more thing to talk about, what I heard from the angels and spirit is to hold the intention in your day to be fully present and to fully engage. And also to notice in your life where you are putting, whether it be in a relationship or it be at work, where you're really putting your happiness on a layaway plan. I'll be happy when. I'll be happy if. I'll be happy when. And that if you're not happy, if you're experiencing some pain, then to be present with that in your life and let that be your teacher. Let that guide you into new ways of thinking. And to hold that pain like you would hold a baby. To bring a level of awareness and acceptance to it. and let it bring you new insights about yourself. I know it can be hard at times, because it's that way of walking in the world of I'll be happy when. It's a big coping mechanism for people, but it keeps us paralyzed, right? It keeps us from really tasting the full joy of life. Because, you know, all this talk about pain is the point being is we get to experience real joy, real happiness, real connection. And when you have tasted that connection with yourself, with a capital S, with that life force, you realize that these things that we're trying to do to bring us temporary relief, that it is really worth taking the time to look inward and be with that. Now, something I just want to, I don't have time to go all into it, but from my article that's coming up in August, is that the quantum principle I was going to mention earlier is that every emotion is a sign of an unmet need. And the quantum principle is, the powerful life-transforming principle is to take the time to, one, recognize the emotion and give it space. So there's a process of just being with it and letting it have space, and then asking, what do I need? And then honoring the part that's the most powerful thing is to honor that need without trying to make it happen, without shaming yourself, or trying to figure out when, or, you know, making it happen, when. Now, if we can honor that need without trying to convince another, shame ourselves, in that moment, we feel like all our needs are met. And then as we feel like all our needs are met, we send that signal out to the universe, right? Then all our needs are met. As well as when we know a need is important, we're able to finally communicate it to another in a way that we're not trying to ram it down their throat. Or we communicate it to another in a way that we're detached from the outcome. Because most of the times in life, it's when we're detached from the outcome that we really get what we want. Want me to say that one again? Most of the time in life, it's when we are detached from the outcome that we really get what we want. Another way of saying that, it's when we are in the present moment and we're just expressing life to feel life moving through us, or in the joy of it, the play of it, or just the presence of it. Maybe it's not about play. Maybe we're just holding someone's hand and we're crying with them. And we experience a sweetness and a connection that we've never experienced in our life. And so when we're really trying to push towards that end point and try to, there's nothing wrong with having vision or a goal, but it's like once you set the vision or the goal, then it's really trusting life to show up in a way that supports that and being present for what is, present for what shows up, so that you can allow that moment to be fully experienced, as well as be your teacher if it need be. So when we're able to recognize our needs as important, which is completely different than neediness, we're able to make choices and have our actions and words and choices actually line up with the integrity of our heart. How often do we really say things or do things that we really don't realize why we're doing what we're doing, right? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because we really don't know what we're needing. And we don't know what we're needing because we haven't taken time to recognize what we're feeling. Kind of like a domino effect. If you don't know what you're feeling and haven't created space with it, I'm not saying you have to make it all go away. Just create some space. Be with it. Give it a hug. And are you needing security, protection, love, support? Empathy. These are fundamental needs. Fundamental meaning like you water a plant, that's fundamental to the plant's health. These are fundamental to a human's health, to a human's being. And how often have you shamed yourself for needing support or empathy? And can you honor that need as important? Just think the way your life would change if really you begin to have that level of being on your own side and loving yourself. The changes that I have seen in people's health and in people's life by beginning to honor their feelings and their needs, it's profound, incredibly, incredibly profound. So let's do that process for a moment. I just want to walk you through that process of honoring your feelings and then honoring your needs. You want to do that before we finish? All right. So allowing me to support you and love you. Allow the earth to support you and love you. As you begin to connect in and take a few breaths, and just noticing what you're feeling. Many times when I ask someone that question, they'll share a thought. So make sure when you connect in, you're noticing what you're feeling, not what you're thinking. Good. And as you notice what you're feeling, whatever it is, begin to create some space around it, meaning just breathing and being present with it. Nothing you need to do with it. And then just notice again what you're feeling and then just being present with it and watching it, letting your breath support you. Now, as I read these, just notice what really pops out. So these are fundamental needs, and we're not going to go into strategy, right? We're just going to honor them as real and important within you. So are you needing, as you feel this feeling, are you needing empathy, connection, love? Are you needing inclusion or community or support? Are you needing respect, safety, protection? Are you needing survival, sustenance, procreation? Are you needing meaning, contribution, integrity? Are you needing freedom, autonomy, or empowerment? Are you needing honesty, self-connection, clarity? Are you needing well-being, peace of mind, ease, trust? Or are you needing presence, beauty, flow, or space, or harmony? Two or three of those that stood out to you. Two or three that stood out. And now honor that, whatever that need is, honor it within your being in this moment. Honor it as valid, real, and important. Even saying into your heart and into your body, I honor you as valid, real, and important. Good, good. Now take a few breaths. Now, as you honored that as valid, real, and important, what do you notice? Do you notice how you feel a little bit better? Wonderful. Remembering that all of life is seeking to love you if you only let it in, that you lack nothing, and that you who are listening, you are created from the same energy as the stars and as Christ and as the forest. And that you are a thread of the intrinsic web that is a complete representation of the greater system. And from this process I gave you, you can feel that fullness and wholeness of your being and the life-changing effects it can really have. And you can read about its full process in the August article. And please share this material, as well as I'm available to come to healing centers and to holistic-minded businesses that are interested in nonviolent communication and self-acceptance. I love spreading this material. I love working with people for a full day and helping them to see their own brilliance and realize how they can communicate in ways that are life-sustaining and life-giving instead of creating more violence on the planet. So I hope that you take some of what we talked about today and apply it to your life, as well as please share this radio show if it connected with you. Please share it with somebody or let somebody know about Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. That could be the very thing that can help them to change your life. And so remembering that nothing in your life is without purpose, nothing. That if you're willing to be present and fully engaged through self-love, self-compassion, honoring your needs, you remember that you're a part of that intrinsic pattern. And that every day is an opportunity. Every opportunity to a new beginning, to experience a greater you, to remember that you are loved, that you are cherished, that you, as you look into your own face, are the face of the divine, and that you are beautiful, you are valuable, and you are intelligent. And as you remember to practice that self-love and turning your glance inward, you discover something that only uniquely you can do, that function within you. And you become the beautiful star that you've been born to be. You're welcome to give me a call if you'd like to set up a mentoring sessions. I do work on through the phone with some out of state folks, as well as in person, mostly in person, but some people from out of state. You can call me at 734-455-1438, or you can go to acceptedasiam.com. where there's some resources of old articles, as well as books and information about the mentoring program that I love to do and be part of for people. All right. Thank you for listening, and wishing you much, much, much love. And know that I and the universe are cheering you on. You are greatly, greatly loved. All right. Take care.